Hugh Mitchell joins us on Trot Radio, the CEO of Western Fair District. Still takes me a bit of time to call it district and not raceway, but I guess like many old timers, I'll have to get used to it. Welcome to Trot Radio, Hugh.
Thanks so much, Norm.
You must be feeling pretty good about the kind of year that was this past season at Western Fair, because the numbers are out, and since January 1st of this year, you're up about $3.7 million, more than last year, over the same amount of time, same amount of cards and races. A lot of your colleagues are probably saying, how, you know, can you get a 26% increase in this economic climate? And if so, they're probably wanting to take you to the test barn.
Oh, I'm there. Yeah, okay.
That's a compliment, Hugh.
Yeah, well, thank you. Well, a lot of the credit goes to Greg Blanchard and Ian Fleming for, carding competitive races with the support of our horse people, and B, aggressively trying to sell the product across North America, and we've had some success on that front. But we don't bask in the sun for very long, because honestly, this business was all about momentum, and when you got it going your way, it's a good ride, but frankly, it doesn't always last. So these double-digit improvements in wagering, I don't think are sustainable. That said, the sad part, Norm, of all of it is that it really, I don't think, is new business. It is really wagering from some other market. So I don't think I'm pretty sure the parimutuel pie across North America is not growing. What is happening is there's been a shifting of wagering from various jurisdictions and sites to another.
You've been saying that for some time, so basically you feel that the gains are coming from the same pie, as you said, and we're kind of cannibalizing it. Does that mean, though, that as an industry, as a sport, we're always going to have that niche market, and it's always going to be the same players hopefully rising to the top in order to succeed?
I just think we have an oversaturation of racing on this continent, and thoroughbred, standardbred, quarter horse, given the kind of competitive situation we now exist in 2012 versus 40 years ago, when this distribution model of live racing was cast. And so the distribution model has not adapted or adjusted to the changing times, in my view, and I think in due course it'll have to, in order for any element of it to survive.
You know, it's funny you say that, and you point back to 40 years ago. I remember looking at the official magazine of the Canadian Trotting Association, as it was known at the time, and it was just as off-track betting was coming into being, and the title story was Off-Track Betting, Boon or Boondoggle. And I think to some extent we're still asking ourselves that question vis-a-vis simulcast.
Well, that's true. Although I think because of technology, it was inevitable that the notion of making yourself easy and convenient to buy from and using technology and capitalizing on technology to do so, I think as much as some of us traditionalists might not have been over accepting of simulcasting of the day, I think that it was inevitable it was going to come in the next phase, and it's here already. Online gaming from handheld devices. I mean, we're moving more and more to having to adapt to a new technology environment, and that means wide open distribution.
You've struck on something that I want to get to in just a moment. Right now, I want to go back to the Molson Pace, and what a fantastic evening that was and is. All Sources handle, however, was down slightly, about 7.5% from 2011, but the live handle was up 11%. To about 140,000, total handle 340,000. Now, again, we talk about competition from other tracks. There were 37 tracks that night racing between 4 and 8 p.m. Would you consider, for example, moving the Molson's Pace to another night of the week to try and maybe get that extra bit?
Yeah, we would. Actually, we would. We have adapted to, over the years, been very aggressive in adapting our post times to where we fit in the North America parimutuel scene. We're not the premier racing facility in Canada or Ontario. I mean, that's Woodbine Entertainment Group. Mm-hmm. And we have to work around their schedules, and there's other premier racing associations in North America that we have to work around their schedules. So if it means a different date to present the Molson pace where we can maximize parimutuel, we'll consider it for sure.
Let me throw this question to you, because my feeling is, coming from a radio background, if there's a lot of eyes in the building at any one time, and I'm speaking about the different OTBs, and that's, okay, it is a Friday, but and there are a lot of tracks, but, you know, more eyes means more attention to your product at some point, and, you know, if you look at it, okay, you don't do it Friday, what are you going to do? Do it Saturday? There's just as many tracks. Sunday, same thing. Do you really want to have it on a Wednesday? I wouldn't think so.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't really debated it internally, but I think we can never close our mind to looking at the way we present and showcase this sport differently. And if it means a different day, and we haven't gone through those analysis, Norm, but, I mean, you're always balancing the remote wagering versus the live wagering when you're presenting these premier events. Because obviously the nights and the weekends are the strongest day to get live attendance out. But by the same token, as you've pointed out, in terms of the very, very busy simulcast scene out there, a secondary product like us often does better when we will go through the week and with an earlier post.
You had a after party and concert promotion, which I thought was really smart. Did it hit the right demographic for the right purposes?
You know something, I would say that was not a success.
Hmm.
I think that maybe we were trying to do too much in a weekday, which Friday is a weekday. That might have been a better approach on a weekend, a Saturday or a Sunday maybe. But no, that's one that I got to tell you, we did not meet our targets in terms of attendance.
Let's shift gears for a minute to something that is very current, very pressing to all of us. You're on the ORAI task force, and Sue Leslie recently discussed the formation. She said the board of ORAI has struggled, and she says it's been conflicted in each member's individual roles and the people they represent. Now, if you represent the entire industry, I guess the question is, why is there a conflict at the board level, and doesn't it imply that something needs to change with respect to representation?
Well, here's clear the issue for ORAI. They represent all stakeholders in the industry,
mm-hmm.
breeders, horse people, racetracks, and different breeds. And for them to make... to try and create some unanimous or consensus around some huge monumental adjustments in the model for racing in this province is extremely difficult, because those who sit on that board are representing their constituents, and they can't very comfortably be judge and jury on significant changes that negatively impact their constituents. So it's difficult for ORAI, who I am very supportive, to champion monumental change. And so I guess they've struck a task force to try and be as objective as possible to present a model that has some element of sustainability. But for sure, it'll be a different model than we see today. So how you strike a new industry organization, because you've got this balancing act, Norm, between mm-hmm. making sure that people are represented from all aspects of the industry, which is important, but by the same token, those have to have the ability and the will to champion the much-needed changes that are required to adapt to the marketplace as it evolves. So,
and everybody has their own agenda, and I don't say that in a negative way, but you know, everybody has their own business plan, and they become very nervous when it looks like they're going to have to give up something that they've been planning on, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. So it's a bit of a quandary, and I guess you need to get to where there's objectivity and independence, transparency, but where there's some element of total objectivity about running a decision on the future of racing. Otherwise, trying to reach a consensus is actually it's something that isn't realistic.
It's untenable. Yeah. Stan Sedensky has been given till the end of June to come up with a plan that Orion will either say yay or nay. Do you think there is a deadline that racing needs to have this plan to government to let them know, look, we mean business. Here it is.
I think there is. And the longer it goes on, unattended to, I think the more the industry will start to shrink and deteriorate, particularly starting at the breeder's end of the business. Mm-hmm. So the urgency I see is inside ourselves, trying to find a solution as quickly as we can that is acceptable to government and makes some sense going forward. So the deadline is really ours.
Let me take it a step further, because it is going to be a Stan Sedensky product, if you will. What happens if Orion isn't in line with the plan? Stan did a report for racing back in 2008, and you talk about different agendas. It wasn't readily embraced by the industry. Do you think it'll be different this time around?
I do. I think because the circumstances are different, Norm. Right now, we're in the 12th round, and we're on one knee.
Yeah.
We, as an industry, hopefully have matured to the point where we will accept change. Back in 2008 or 2009, when this report came out, we were still trucking on with 20% of the gross net win coming to the racing industry at our racetrack slot program. I mean, there was no real incentive, frankly, for change, because we were all doing reasonably well. Today, that's different. The racetrack slot program is over in less than a year. And so I think the circumstances around the willingness of the industry to accept some new model are dramatically changed today versus 4 or 5 years ago.
Certainly has. I want to close the interview with something that's come up in the last little while. Members of the industry, such as myself, and it's just a personal observation, have been saying, you know what, it might be time to take the gloves off and really go to town with the government on this one. Earlier this week, Senator Bob Runciman wrote a letter in one of the major Toronto newspapers saying that Orion's response has been, quote-unquote, tame. He says, and I quote, "In their efforts to combat the decision, the industry has opted to use billboards that say nothing about the government's action, a petition drive, naively hoping that thousands of signatures will force the government to change course. I'm not saying we declare all-out war on Dalton McGuinty, but do you not think perhaps it's time to start hitting back a bit more?"
Well, I think it's time to be aggressive and firm, not foolish, but I think we need to be fair. And I think I've always felt that taking a very professional, business-like approach, trying to find solutions and win-wins are important, Norm. In my lifetime, anytime I've started a fight, I usually end up with a bloody nose.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm cautious about about full swings in this environment. And I still get back to, I think, the best way to deal with this is in a professional, business-like way, putting forward a business case that is a win-win for both government and the industry.
I'm not saying that aggression is going to be necessarily picking a huge fight and both sides ending up bloody, but, you know, it makes you wonder whether or not, you know, you try and be professional with this government, but it is very ideologically driven. You have a premier that will set his agenda, may even humor you a bit, but continue on with that agenda. So I guess my question is, you know, they do respond to pressure when it means lost seats. You know, how do we do that without looking unprofessional, I guess? We have to turn up the heat, as you said.
I agree that we need to turn up the heat, and there is, unfortunately, but it's the reality, there is a tremendous amount of politics around this decision. And there also, and there's no question about it, our industry has never seen such an aggressive approach by a government to deal with us than we have today. So these are unprecedented times, us dealing with a government that has really struck a huge chord with us in a negative way. And I'm often searching for why it is that they're this aggressive.
I don't think you'll find out why. Personally, my feeling is I think the premier has a personal issue from an animal rights standpoint, let's say, with horse racing.
I could be. I don't know, Norm. I really don't, and that's.
I just wonder why else would they be so headstrong about it when you know the business model has been solid, da 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 da, and we go.
Yeah, well, and this constant reference to the subsidy piece, I think, as you know, for most of us, it's a little inflammatory because we see it as a good business deal that makes business sense for the government as well as ourselves. And maybe over the years, on balance, maybe we should have been a little more accountable on benchmarking the benefits of the slot program to the industry and to the communities we serve. But that's it. There's no sense looking back. It's a lesson for the future. But these are, to say the least, troubling times for sure. And there is some urgency to dealing with our challenges. And I asked myself the other day why I really wanted to be involved in a task force, because I wasn't really sure I did, because it's a no-win situation.
Yeah.
Win situation. But, I mean, I've enjoyed, and my family and my parents have enjoyed a tremendous lifestyle as a result of horse racing for some 4 or 5 decades. So I think a few of us who have taken a lot out of the sport ought to be giving something back over the course of time.
Well said. To be continued, I'm sure.
Yes.
Hugh Mitchell, a pleasure having you on Trot Radio. Please do not be a stranger to this program.
Thanks so much, Norm.